Broadcasting from the super-secret underground bunker at World Headquarters, this is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Stand by. Accessing primary security protocols. Your access has been approved. Welcome to Level 11P7.
Greetings, everyone. Welcome to this edition of Level 11P7, talking about Agent Carter. Jason Hunt here in the studio with Timothy Harvey.
Hello.
Dan Handley.
Hello.
And we are a little bit late tonight, crew-wise. Cammie and Maya are absent because they are working on a super-secret project that we will maybe announce a little bit closer to Planet Comic-Con. In their stead, dialing in from Corpus Christi, Texas, way down there, she has finally agreed to talk into a microphone after I've been bugging her for so many years and years. Mm-hmm. Sonia Rodriguez, best friend, hello, former radio colleague. She's joining us tonight with some insight and analysis as well. So let's get into the episode, the plot of the episode, because this one actually kind of felt like it was written. It had a plot, yeah.
So it wasn't just a series of cliches.
No, I mean last week was bad. We
there wasn't anything there last
no,
week.
No, last week was no, I mean, no, there no, was week before last.
There was, no, it well, was bad because there was no
last week. There was a repeat of the bad one from the week before.
Okay.
After that was bad, but
that one, wow.
Yeah, that one.
I would have gone with the pilot.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah, we could have repeated the pilot and not repeated the one that we saw before. That was
right.
Yeah. So tonight, Howard Stark is back, sneaking around inside the Griffith with all of the women folk when he should be hiding. But you know, it's Howard Stark. He is back to determine just how many of his inventions the SSR has their hands on, so he can figure out whether or not any of them are still out at large. And so ostensibly he's here to give Peggy a camera pen. Do you know how long it took to figure out the miniaturization of the lens? He says. And so she can take little snappy pictures in the lab while she's taking lunch orders, of course. And then we have Mr. Mink, who is, I guess he was responsible. How did he bring in? He brought Howard. He smuggled Howard back into the country.
Right.
Is his entry point into the story. And he also has a nice little fancy mini Gatling gun that apparently fires magic bullets. We'll get into that here in a minute. And then Chief Dooley heads over to Germany because there is a German officer about to be hanged who apparently was at the Battle of Fennel.
Which
we learned
connects to our mysterious voiceless Russians.
Yes, Leviathan agents. And we learned from him that the Battle of Fennel actually never took place.
At least not as it's been described. Right.
Because when the Germans got there, when the German army got there, the Russians were already dead, sliced and diced by something. I don't know if that could be monsters or mechanicals. It could go either way at this point. We don't have any indication one way or the other. So, in Dooley's absence, Thompson is put in charge. Wet behind the ears, kid. I mean, it really, he's a little young to be the one that Dooley puts in charge. I know he's Chad Michael Martin Murphy. So whatever his name is, Chad Murray.
Chad Michael Murray.
All right, yeah.
It was kind of odd. I mean, even Eastside said, all of a sudden this guy has like 14,000 lines.
Yeah, he did have a lot to do tonight.
I didn't really pay attention to this character in the last few episodes. In this episode, it's like he's like, okay, Agent Thompson, where have you been?
Well, he's been there, but he hasn't really. You're right. He hasn't had much to do. But this is something that we've complained about before. That the guy, the agents, the men in the show, haven't really had that much to do except look stupid so Peggy could look smart.
Yeah.
And this time, they actually don't do that. And I don't know, do we have to get Dooley out of the office in order to smarten up the room? Is that what we're having to do?
Well, no.
Because Dooley's investigating, and you pointed this out, you know, that they're actually doing stuff.
Well, they had to kill off the totally useless character,
right?
Krasinski. You know what? I don't know because right now I'm watching this. I realized something tonight. Mm. This show has no idea what its tone is. It doesn't have any idea. There is no consistency on tone.
Yeah.
And the thing that really sold it to me was the fact that we were about a third of tonight's episode was the madcap comedy.
The Scooby-Doo going across the hall.
The Scooby-Doo thing, but not only that, we have the camera phone, the pen camera, which goes, which no one hears.
Right.
we have the dining scene. We have
everybody's hoarding food.
Yeah, and
was my favorite scene.
Can you make one of those that holds a pickle? I mean, come on. It's the screwball comedy,
yeah.
Right? And except.
You can't argue that whole gravy pouch thing wasn't funny.
Oh, it was. Oh, sure, it was.
It was funny.
It was funny. The problem is that the last, you know, you have that, and then you have, you know, contrasted with a scene about talking about coming back from the war, mm-hmm. And you have a scene where they touch on the tragedy of alcoholism. By the way, hopefully they took that guy to the hospital because. I like Scotch. I'm a big fan. My family's Scottish. We you know, it's built into the bloodline. Nobody drinks Scotch like that without going to the hospital.
Right.
Because, I mean, he's dead. He's either dead or he's throwing up or he's having, you know, serious alcohol poisoning. Terrible, terrible Scotch.
Or he's another superhuman going to be shown. Oh, wait.
I don't think everybody's a superhuman.
So it's just,
but I think you're right. I think... From the tone, but see the thing about it is though from the 40s, you had the film, you had the noir, you know, the film noir mystery crime thriller
mm-hmm.
genre, and then you also had the things like Bringing Up Baby, Christmas in Connecticut, those kind of madcap screwball type of things.
But not all in 1 hour.
No, not all in 1 hour. But you've got writers who are sitting there saying, oh, well, we're in the 40s.
Let's do this. Yeah.
Let's do the 40s. And the it's their...
Every part of the 40s
they're
in 1 hour.
They're mixing metaphors. But I think that it could be, you know, they tried to do a combination of the two different dominant genres, you know, types of films that were prevalent back in the 40s, and they tried to mix it up, and it didn't quite work. But overall, the episode worked a lot better than 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, so this episode definitely was more, 2 weeks ago, it was making me very angry.
Yeah.
This was much more...
I'm still trying to figure out the Gatling gun.
Yeah, well, that's just the problem. You can't because, I mean, we were joking on one of the commercial breaks that they were going to say it was a Russian gun invented, you know, gun invented by a Russian scientist who thought that the Russians invented everything because that way you could make a little nod at Chekhov's gun and not actually say it. But, no, it's just, I mean, yeah, it didn't fire actual bullets. It didn't eject any shells.
There was no magazine. All of those bullets to be coming out of that gun, you had to have a magazine for it, and it's not there.
But I tell you what, I didn't care. The second time we saw the gun, because of what happened the second time we saw the gun, I just didn't care.
Right. And what we saw with the gun, Mr. Mink has used the gun to eliminate his henchmen what failed to get the money from Jarvis. On behalf of Stark to smuggle him back into the country. And then we see Mink. Now, I'm trying to figure out, is Mink a boss? Is Mink a henchman? Is Mink just one of these guys kind of like Badger from Firefly, where he sits there and kind of does what he does?
I don't know. Good, bad. He's the guy with the gun.
I think he was an upper middleman.
Upper middle management? That could be.
Upper middle management. You know, just like, he was above some people, but I don't think he was the top guy. obviously he's not the top guy, he's dead.
Right. Yeah, he's not the top guy, he's dead. But his death was rather a surprise. Not necessarily the fact that he died, but the way that he died.
That is a ballet move I've never seen before.
Oh, yes, we have. Oh, yes, we have.
Not in ballet, though.
We've seen that move a couple of different times.
We've seen the move, but not in ballet.
Well, if the Avengers 2 teasers are any indication, some of those flashbacks are going to involve ballet. And we're going to get a little bit more history for Natasha Romanoff. But immediately when Bonnie, the ballet dancer, comes out of that room and says, that's not automatic. I mean, the shift in the in the beat. And then she kills him with that Black Widow move. And Twitter just blew up. What just happened? What just happened? And everybody, of course, recognizes the move as Black Widow's move.
Oh, yeah.
And you and I are sitting there, she's either, this Bonnie character is either Natasha Romanoff's teacher, or at least recruits her, or is some way connected into Natasha's history. And I'm guessing that she's going to show up in the flashback in Age of Ultron, is how they're going to connect Agent Carter with other pieces of the Marvel universe besides just Captain America.
Possibly, because I think we also got in the teaser for the next episode, we also got a look at a small girl with
red hair.
Which opens up the whole how old is Natasha in this universe, because in the 616 universe, in the actual comic books,
which is about to go away.
Right.
So to speak.
Natasha is one of several characters who is much, much older than she initially appears.
Right.
Because she was a product of the Soviet super soldier program, to some degree. And her longevity spun out of that. And so she was a product of World War II. In fact, she and Captain America and Wolverine all fought during World War II together.
Yeah.
against the Nazis.
Along with Nick Fury.
Along with Nick Fury.
And the Howling Commandos. I'm really looking forward to seeing the Howling Commandos coming back.
I am too.
Oh, yes.
That's going to be fun. Because it's always fun to see dumb.
But you kind of also want David Hasselhoff to show up in an eye patch too during this.
I do. I do.
And that's just wrong.
I think that would be so much fun.
Wrong.
Because it's a multiverse.
And then would they...
Dirty, filthy, and wrong. You should be ashamed of yourself.
Would they start playing his version of Hooked on a Feeling?
Yeah. Well, see, the thing about it is, though, I mean, that would be a nice... It would be a nice nod to what has happened before, because they did that with Howard the Duck.
Uh-huh.
And nobody thinks that there's going to be any kind of a Howard the Duck anything except maybe more comic books. You know, but if Hasselhoff showed up in a flashback, or if he showed up somewhere back in the 1940s, then it would be one of those things. The fans would get it. Mm-hmm. The fans would get it. They'd look and they'd go, I know what they're doing.
You'd have to do it in such a way that it wasn't... It would have to be done in such a way that you couldn't sit there and look at it and go, oh, hey, it's David Hasselhoff. It's a thing. It'd have to just be, you know, because...
It'd have to be organic to the story. It wouldn't be... You couldn't do it as a gimmick and make it work.
Which, there's your... How do you do that with David Hasselhoff? I mean, it's kind of like, oh, I don't know, the paper exchanging scene in tonight's episode, which was very cute and very sweet.
Oh, yeah, Stanley.
And Stanley. And it's the Stanley law that he has to be involved in and to appear in all these things, because that's...
I'm actually surprised that it took this long for him to show up. I figured he'd be in the first couple of episodes.
But you know what? It basically, right then and there, it's, you know, not that there's any illusions that we're watching a television show, but it's like, oh, look, you're watching a television show. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, I don't know. I mean, I liked it. It was fun. It was, hey, he got to hold a newspaper that's the proper size. I'm
But you know, he's probably going to show up in Daredevil as well.
Oh, course. Sure, he should. Absolutely. He should. You know, and I think that's, I think, you know, I think that it, you should, for the MCU, he should be the Watcher. I think that's a great fan theory, and I think he should be.
That would be so much fun.
Because then you could actually have a serious moment with him and mm-hmm. you know, that could be fun.
But. Yeah, because up until that point, he's crazy old man. And, you know, he's the comic relief. That's until he's not.
It's the crazy old man. It's the in joke for the fans. Mm-hmm. And then it's, you know.
The big reveal.
Right.
So, yeah, that would be interesting. Of course, it's not part of Agent Carter, which is what we're talking about tonight. See, there's our little digression.
We have to digress. It's the law.
Yeah, well, you know. But you see, really, though, the plot was kind of straightforward. You had Howard wants to get the stuff, or he wants to see where the stuff is. Because there's one particular one that now he's got to retrieve.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he tells Peggy that it's an EMP bomb, you know, electromagnetic pulse. It'll wipe out the electrical grid for the entire tri-state area. Which really sounds like something Doofenshmirtz would do, doesn't it? as soon as Howard said tri-state area, I went, wait a minute. My head went automatically to Phineas and Ferb. No. Tri-state area. I got it. So this device, and of course, this is what Jarvis is lying about, that mm-hmm. there's a button and it'll make very bad things happen.
Just the one button.
Yeah. And so Peggy, of course, opens it. Bum, bum, bum. She finds a vial of blood in it. Of course, everybody knows whose blood that is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I did. My 11-year-old son has to tell me. I have no idea.
Your 11-year-old son is fairly smart.
Well, here's the thing, is that it's kind of like, it's the law of conservation of characters. You know, it's this thing where, you know, you
right.
you have, if you have 10 characters and it's a murder mystery, one of them will be the killer, you know? It's just the law, right? And so you've got one character that we haven't had on camera for most of the show, but a good chunk of the show is actually about.
Yeah,
Or it's the shadow of Captain America, the shadow of Steve Rogers hangs heavy over the show. Mm-hmm. And of all the, you know, the vials of blood, of all the characters that a vial of blood could possibly have anything to do with or mattered,
it would be his.
It would be his, unless there's something else it could have been.
What?
It could have been Hitler's blood, and it could have been part of the plot to clone Hitler.
Now, wait a minute. We haven't gotten to that story yet.
But the thing is that interestingly enough, that's an MCU. I mean, that's a Marvel Universe thing. Yeah. Hitler has been, and interestingly enough, considering that in the bigger MCU, we just got news that Baron Zemo has been cast.
Yes, Daniel Grohl.
And that.
But we don't know which Baron Zemo. It's going to be Baron Zemo or Baron Zemo Jr.
Right. So, if it's Baron, you know, odds are good it's going to be Zemo Jr. because of his age. But right. Again, we keep coming back to this Hydra Nazi connection mm-hmm. playing through again. So, we possibly may see his, you know, the senior. The contemporary Zemo
right.
show up in something like Carter. I was thinking of that going, okay, it's got to be Captain America's blood, but wouldn't it be a fun twist if it's the Red Skull's blood Hitler's blood yeah. or, you know, because it would fit perfectly in this kind of storytelling.
Right.
For all of this doesn't know what kind of storytelling it is, it would still fit in, so.
And it's one of those just out of nowhere, it sends you in a completely different direction.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yep. Now, the reveal here that the Battle of Fennel didn't happen the way it's been described,
mm-hmm.
Because we actually have, now we actually have our agents agenting for the first time, mm-hmm. actually investigating, actually going and doing things. We have Chief Dooley going over to Germany.
There's only three of them that were working.
Yeah.
Those
are doing. Well, three is still, you know, three more than what we'd normally get.
Yeah.
So, you know, Dooley goes over to Germany to talk to this German army officer who's about to get executed. And this German officer reveals that there was no Battle of Fennel. Whenever they arrived, all of the Russians were already dead, had been sliced and diced and torn apart by something, either mechanical or bestial, we don't know. So Dooley comes back. What?
I don't know, just it's going to be connected to a whole bunch of people dying in a small province in China.
It could, you know, it you never know. You never know.
Well, I think, you know, it's
Given that the Inhumans have been introduced now, there's nothing that says they couldn't connect it back further.
Right? Oh, yeah, you exactly. Know?
Right. So Dooley comes back. In the meantime, while Dooley is gone, Thompson is in charge. Young baby face, wet behind the ears, Thompson.
Who's in his late 30s, by the way. I mean,
doesn't
I don't know.
Doesn't
just want to point that out. He's in his late 30s.
He's
clearly.
Still a kid.
He's in his late
30s?
Yeah.
He is. Yeah. He's got one of those faces, but.
Well, for those of us who grew up watching him on, where was it, on Seventh Heaven? Is he on Seventh Heaven?
No, it was One Tree Hill.
One Tree Hill.
It was One Tree Hill, and then he was on that movie, Cinderella Story. It's Hilary Duff.
Yeah, with Hilary Duff. And the only reason I know this is because I saw a promo for it. I didn't watch it.
He's not that old, is he, really?
Yeah. Well,
late 30s.
The,
I can't believe that.
The corollary question to that is, you know, not just that he's not that old, is he? It's, we're not that old, are we? You know? It's like, wait a minute.
Well, and then the fact that he just suddenly has an entire script of lines, just all of a sudden, that was kind of funny too.
Yeah, it's like, wait a minute, we're going to give you something to do? What?
Yeah.
Well, and Sousa goes off and does his thing tonight. Sousa proves to be a fairly competent investigator as well.
He's actually been the only one that's actually been competent since day one, pretty much.
That's true.
I mean, even though they kind of dumb him down just slightly, but he's smarter than the average bear, and the average isn't very high for these men in this show. So.
Well, and I thought it was an interesting speech that he gave when he brought the, you know, he goes out to the docks, he finds the homeless guy who witnessed a very well dressed man and a dark haired woman coming off the, you know, going onto the boat, coming off the boat, and they're sitting there talking, and of course Sousa can't get anything out of him, and tries to appeal to his better nature as a veteran, as a war veteran. And comes in and says, you know, gives this speech about walking into this diner and everybody's applauding, but he realizes it's because he's been wounded, it's because his leg is gone, mm-hmm. is why he's getting the recognition, is out of pity. It's not necessarily, you know, a thanks for your service, it's, you know, stuff. And then, of course, Thompson comes in with a burger and scotch and gets it right out of the guy what he saw. And that must have been some really good scotch.
Yeah. No, that's alcohol poisoning, what we got going on right there.
Or it's very watered down and weak.
Yeah, it's really, really crappy scotch, one of the two.
Or
yeah.
He's actually superhuman.
Actually, well, if it's crappy scotch, wouldn't it make it worse?
Oh, well, probably.
Yeah.
It's just, you know,
it's
bad alcohol all the way around. Or he, like I said, he's dying. I mean, he's dead.
And he just doesn't care.
He just doesn't care. Mm-hmm. By the way, I just wanted to throw in that the World War II, the flights, transatlantic flights from New York
to Germany.
Yeah. 24 to 30 hours. So I'm not entirely sure how long this episode took, but apparently over a week.
That is so funny because I thought the same thing. I was like, wow, that's pretty fast for 1940. But,
Didn't he say he had about 24 or 26 hours to get over to Germany before they executed him, and he was leaving right away? So that takes care of that trip out there. We don't know how long it took him to
get. It was a metaphor escape. Like, he wasn't going to actually give him a way to physically escape. He was just going to give him the medicine.
Turned out to be a breath mint.
Yeah. In 1947, 27 passenger flights from across the Atlantic.
But how much?
No, just think about that for a second.
27.
I make more flights than that now, and I don't even fly. So,
well, and you know, who's to say the SSR doesn't have their own plane? You know, they're a government agency.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
it could be like the CIA. They've got their own plane, you know. So, you know, they could be on standby, call the hangar, get the plane. So Dooley comes back.
Okay, and they only have the one office.
I do have to qualify that. In 1946, Pan Am's DC-4 17 hours.
Okay.
So
maybe that's the one he caught.
It could be.
But that's just to London.
Still. So, you know, London to Germany is not too much of a hop.
I'm just saying. You know? It's just another example of the magic.
A number cruncher. That's good. Like
it's just another example of the inability of films and television. And this is, you know, this happens all the time.
Yeah.
Is, and then we got there from here.
Well, and that's how many times have you complained about that on The Walking Dead? The fact that they don't have a map.
Oh God! The problem is they're all in the same like 5 mile stretch always. I mean, they've never left it. No, the worst.
And he was a cop. He was got cops there. Shouldn't he know the entire area?
The worst example. Oh yeah.
Oh
yeah. The fact that nobody knew where the prison was.
You were a cop.
That's when they throw up the little thing that says "scene missing."
Yeah, yeah. The worst example of all time, I think, for me personally, was the one of the Transformer movies, probably the second one, which is a terrible film, by the way, folks. Folks, don't watch the Transformer films; they're awful. And is the bit where they get the Smithsonian. Where the Air and Space Museum is like completely not where it is in the real world.
Right.
But they also go from Petra. They drive. They're driving in one of the cars, and apparently they drive through Israel without ever going through a checkpoint, and do it in like 2 hours. And I'm like, yeah, you know, that's completely near. Oh wait, it's Michael Bay. Never mind.
Yeah,
logic. I was applying logic. What's wrong with me?
Yes. Now, speaking of logic, we will apply some of that in our analysis of the episode after the break, because we've got to refill our coffee mugs, and we will be back with more Level 117 right after this. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Sci-Fi for Me Radio. Until you unsubscribe in a sudden but inevitable betrayal.
All right, you all listening to Level 117, you are no doubt true believers of some stripe, as are we, and some of you are probably even fans of the Distinguished Competition. So, now that the first wave of DC Comics television shows are on the air, it's time to talk about them. Our new DC TV podcast, we call it The Rogues Gallery, and you can hear that same place you hear everything else, right here on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Hey everyone, Leslie Walker of Sci-Fi for Me here, just to give you a little reminder that our super smart crew members share their thoughts weekly on the DC shows Gotham, The Flash, and Arrow. Check out our podcast where we discuss these shows and story arcs, character development, plot twists, misses, and wins. Or if you'd rather check in for a quick recap read, we have you covered there as well. So join us for some DC-flavored morsels at scififorme.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
And now, back to Level 117, the only 100% Hydra-free podcast on the internet. Hail Hydra.
Back on Level 117, Jason Hunt here, along with Tim Harvey.
Hello.
Dan Handley.
Hello.
And down in Corpus Christi, Texas, Sonia Rodriguez, my conscience.
Wait a minute.
She needs to be doing her job.
I know you. You don't have one of those.
I do have one. I have an overinflated one.
900 miles away. That's why you can't.
That explains it. It's kind of like, don't you have any ethics? Yes, they're in a box underneath my bed.
What? That's right. That's right.
So you haven't been working with the Patriots if it's overinflated, right?
Oh, hey, there you go. Hey,
you know, we've got
one of
references.
The very rare sports references we actually get on these shows.
And I actually got that
and
one.
Jason got it too.
And leave it to me to come up with it, right?
It's like, wait a minute. We all know that one.
Yes. So we are talking about Agent Carter. The episode, The Blitzkrieg Button, and we have gone over a plot, which was pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
And technology being what it is, this is the now third time that we're talking about it, that if you're listening to it, it actually took...
Stop revealing our secrets.
The
117th recording.
The thing is that it would kill the illusion that we're not actually doing this live.
You know, we are going to have to do something really special for our 117th episode.
If we get that far. I just want to let you know that I can't stand that title because there's no such number. Okay, I got it out.
I, Tolkien said it was a number. It's good enough for me. It's good enough for Tolkien.
Tolkien also says there's a second breakfast.
I could work with that.
Yeah, I'm all right with that.
I'm all right with that.
What is your issue with second breakfast?
The problem is I haven't been doing it.
Well, see, okay.
I need to start.
That sounds like a personal failing.
And yeah, that's all
I do
you
do. I do second breakfast.
Do you? Yeah, well, see.
Yeah, oh, heck yeah. Right between first and second period. Heck yeah.
There you go.
And that reference, of course, is because Sonia is a teacher in her real job.
In the real world?
In the real world, yes.
There's a real world?
Yeah, there is, and we're not talking about that tonight. We're talking about the fake world. We're talking about the Marvel Cinematic Universe world, wherein we have vials of Steve Rogers' blood circulating around.
Or a vial.
Well, there's actually...
And women can eat and still be... Ben, that is a fake world.
That was a pretty amazing spread. I'm not entirely sure. Okay.
Sorry, that was an awesome scene. I loved it.
Yeah, but you know what? This is the most amazing apartment building that never existed.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of insane. And...
it's really gorgeous. I mean, I found myself staring at the crown molding when she was over there by the dummy. What do they call those things?
The dumbwaiter. The dumbwaiter.
Uh-huh. I was staring at the crown molding going, wow, that's really nice. Oh, wait, they did just...
Well, and I think it's an absolutely great building, and it's another one of those things where the show can't figure out what its tone is.
Yeah.
You know, because it's... Because what's the name of the landlady?
Oh, I don't even know her name. I just call her.
Yeah, her.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, we all know who she's talking about. I mean, she's a character right out of Central Casting. I mean, she really is. She's the, and you just want to grab hold of her and go, okay, tell me the truth. Who are you really? You know, because you can't be this person. What is it?
And then, you know, what was funny was, you know, Peggy yelled really loud. She didn't hear her.
Okay, like, yeah.
She'd only turned the corner like 3 seconds before, and then she's all, Howard! Like,
yeah, well,
banging
that,
on the door.
Well, not only that, but knocking a hole in the wall by turning up the music. Okay, because the impact of breaking a hole in a brick wall... is the, you know, there's no actual impact. There's just noise.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, no, that's not how that works.
But that goes into what you were saying before about the whole, you know, the time, the airplane, that nothing's working with those little things.
Well, I think there's a few little things
like that that just kind of bother you. You're just like, that doesn't work, but okay, we'll just ignore it.
It's comic book show logic, is what it is.
Yeah, but the problem is that...
But I get what you're saying about the tone, because, you know, in the 40s, you had the film noir, you had the madcap comedy, you know, bringing up Baby, you know, the Cary Grant stuff, and it sometimes feels like the writers are doing, oh, we're in the 40s, and they want to mix them.
Well,
and it doesn't quite work.
The thing is that the show is not established enough in itself to have a tone, an overall tone, and it's one thing to depart from its own tone. You know,
right.
We do the comedy episode, we do the musical episode, we do the thing, but we're getting mixes in the course of each episode, and
if we do the musical episode in Peggy Carter, we get Bonnie gets a ballet piece.
Yeah, Bonnie gets a ballet. There we go.
Right. To prove that she's not too tall to be ballet.
Yeah, she's too tall to be a ballet dancer. I'm sorry.
But as we saw tonight, she's not really a ballet dancer.
Well, either that or that's an interesting ballet move.
Well, it is a dangerous business. There's a lot of backstabbing, and it is pretty cutthroat.
Well, and I thought it was really interesting that Twitter blew up.
Oh yeah.
When Bonnie went after Mr. Mink. And did the Black Widow move, the signature, you know, legs around the head, twisty, whoosh, 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 and Twitter, literally, what just happened? And now it makes a little bit more sense. I think there's going to be connective tissue between Bonnie the ballet dancer and Natasha's ballet school flashbacks that we're going to get in Age of Ultron.
Oh, I think
so.
You're
either
right.
either Bonnie recruited Natasha, or Bonnie trained Natasha, or so there's some going to be some kind of a connection. And then we have, of course, in the preview for next week, we see a young girl with red hair, and that you were saying about Natasha.
Well, yeah, Natasha in the comic books is much much older than she looks. She's a product of the 1940s. I mean, she fought in World War II alongside Captain America and Wolverine. In the Marvel Cinematic Universe, we don't have any idea how old Natasha is.
Right.
We don't have any sense of any of the characters, actually, aside from Captain America being around, you know, being young and then in the 40s and young now. And there's a certain amount of the MCU which is inspired by the Ultimate line. There's a certain influence of that, and that wasn't actually a product, really, of mm-hmm. the Ultimate line either. Were the 1940s, a lot of the characters came out of the 1940s. So it'd be very interesting to see what they do, because if we see a young Natasha in the 1940s, then Scarlett Johansson is aging well, really well.
Well, that does open up some different possibilities for that character, though. Too.
It does.
That's a lot of explaining to do.
Well, and that gives you your chance to roll into your Black Widow movie, and you get, like, you know, a Black Widow movie that runs from the 1940s all the way up to present time. You could have some cool spy stuff in the 60s.
I'm still waiting for Marvel's Budapest.
Yes. We all are.
And there's going to be a crossover with the Librarians. Because they mentioned Budapest in the Librarians in the last couple of episodes. I think, who was it? It was Kane's character. What's his name? Stone.
Right.
Talking about Budapest. So I was like, okay, we'll see that story too. In Marvel's Budapest, starring Scarlett Johansson and Jeremy Renner.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's going to happen is that you're going to actually get the Budapest. It's going to start, and then it's just going to stop, and there'll be a little note saying, you know, censored by S.H.I.E.L.D.
you know what they're going to do? Is they'll start the Black Widow movie in Budapest, right in situ, as they do. You know, that thing that I always complain about, when they start in the middle of an action sequence, mm-hmm. and then 8 days before, you know, 3 days ago, 24 hours earlier. That's what they're going to do. I can't stand that.
No, actually what they're going to do instead is going to sit there, and it's going to be the right after right what happens. After,
right after Budapest.
Thank goodness we survived that. Wow!
You get all the flashbacks and time jumps as Quentin Tarantino doing the directing on it.
Now that would be funny. Boy, I'm glad we got out of Budapest alive.
Woo! That was crazy, wasn't it? Yeah, I've never seen anything like that before.
Let's
never
talk
again.
About it again. Yes. Yep. Oh, that was funny. So. Who do we think Mr. Mink is? Is he working for somebody? Do you think he's just on his own?
I think he's the disposable character with the cool toy. I don't think he was. I mean, he shows up basically to.
He's a function.
He's a function. He's function. Yeah, he's a plot. He's a plot point.
Plot device.
Well, and on the character side, we got. You were saying earlier that we got some fairly decent development all the way around. Characters more than others.
Each character had a moment. Each character had a chance to sit there and go, "Oh, hey, I'm not a complete cliche.
Yeah.
I'm not the worst detective in the history of detectiving. I'm not the worst, you know, agent in the history of being an agent." Which up until this point,
yeah.
There's been some question as to whether or not these guys actually went to any kind of training of any kind, resembling an investigation.
I like the fact that this episode we finally get the guys fairly competent and smart, not necessarily, you know, they're still not the sharpest knives in the drawer, but they're not dumbed down in this episode in order to make Peggy look better, which is a vast improvement over 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we get to see all of them doing their thing, and
well, they eliminated a lot of the men, if you notice. you know, the men were only in the very, very beginning, and then they just concentrated on the three. Thompson, Sousa, and then I forget what his name, Dooley?
Dooley, yeah, Chief Dooley.
So, I mean, they concentrated on building these characters, these three men, just concentrating on them. So, of course, they had to have some depth, and they were a little bit smarter in this because they only had the three men to work with.
So Krasinski's death increased the average IQ of all of the rest of the guys.
Pretty much. Yeah, he's okay. He's the one dragging them all down.
I don't keep in mind he was.
They think on a curve.
My son had to remind me who he was because they were like, "Who's this guy?" And my son was like, "The guy that died last week. Don't you remember?" That's how much this guy meant to me.
Yeah, well, and I think that's a good point. Where in the eight episodes do we cross that threshold where we either need to care about a character or not?
Right.
And at that point, if we don't care about the character, does that mean the show has failed, or it just hasn't caught up yet?
I think you need to leave. Care about the good guy, and he was supposedly a good guy, and then he died, and I can't even remember his name. Oh, 2 weeks later, okay, maybe it's me, but I he didn't have enough depth or good guyness in him for me to remember him or even care that he died. They seem to have cared a lot, but of course, it was written for them to care.
Well, and I think some of it too is that. And we talk about this with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. at the beginning, is we had characters at the very beginning who were two-dimensional tropes that eventually got fleshed out.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got a little bit of that here, only we've only got eight episodes, so maybe now we're starting to flesh them out a little bit more.
Well, but I think the problem...
Or is it just plot... allowed for them to expand a little.
Well, hopefully this is the beginning of them being fleshed out, because the problem that we could run into is the problem we had with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is it went on that way long enough that we lost audience.
Right.
And some of it did not come back.
Still hasn't come back.
Yeah, and I think that...
I haven't come back.
And you can't... Well, you just didn't care. And this is... When you've only got eight episodes, you don't have a whole lot of time to sell the audience and the characters.
Which really surprised me that the last episode did what it did, because it really damaged... I'll say that word. Damaged the credibility of all of those characters in the eyes of the audience. It's like, how stupid are these guys really going to be?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, this episode fortunately turned that around. Somewhat.
Well, they had. I think they had to. They had to do what they had to do last week to make sure that things flowed along and everybody got pushed in a certain doorway. Like, dude, you got to go this way, and we're going to show you the door, and we're going to push you all in because everybody's got to be on the same page, and then we'll enlighten you with our next episode. You know,
I think
how I felt.
Yeah, there's a possibility. Sure.
Well, and I think the other thing too tonight with Thompson's character. And I don't want to say he's going to be. I don't want to say redemption arc, but the fact that we get a scene between Thompson and Carter, where Thompson basically says, "You're decoration."
Yeah, why does he call her Marge?
Because he doesn't care enough to know what her real name is. I mean, he knows her name, but it's a nickname. It's a hey lady, hey you. But I think that scene is the setup for something we're going to get later, where he realizes he was stupid and she's smart, and you know, she actually does know what she's doing. It's telegraphing, but I think that because the show does that.
Well, honestly, there was an article I read. I can't remember which magazine it was, and they were talking about the mystery of who Peggy's husband is, And it has been suggested.
Oh.
Yes, it has been suggested.
That the child marries her?
The late 30s child?
No. He's not that old.
No. Anyway, okay, well, I like that better than the
Sousa, of course, is the the obvious choice because he's the good guy with the, you know, the, with the kind heart and all these things. But because, you know, we've got we've got the guy who realizes that, you know, Peggy's hiding something.
I don't know. I don't want it to be Thompson.
Well, honestly, I would love it to be somebody who's not even on the show. You know, because all we know is that, that her husband her husband was saved by Captain America during World War II.
Right.
There's a large number of people who fought during World War II.
David Hasselhoff.
They don't all have to be. Oh dear God.
That's how they bring in Hasselhoff.
She marries Nick Fury Senior. Yeah, I just don't.
Oh
say.
Man.
I really like that part. That her husband's not even on this show because they're all dumb guys, and so her husband can't be on the show.
Well, that's a good point. That's a good point. I mean, does she really want to marry somebody?
Does she have to have married well? So they can't. None of these guys can be her husband.
I got the impression that the guy she married, I got the impression it was after her time at the SSR. That was my impression. I mean, they don't have to say, they didn't say that, but
well, and I think the creators of the show have implied that we have, we're seeing, it's one of these guys is the guy, and she ends up marrying. And so, I mean, like I said, the obvious one is Sousa.
I love that. I mean, he's the obvious one
because he's the guy who thinks. He's the guy who respects her. And he respects her, and he's got the heart of gold. But at the same time, if you have one of these characters, and there's really only one other male character on the show who could possibly be the guy, if you have that, you know, learn to respect, la da da da. We had the beginning of, you know, so Carter, can I buy you some coffee?
No.
And you know, it's, and then you have the big, you know,
I don't want that.
Well, I don't want it either. But the thing is that
that's moonlighting. Only they're not doing it as well.
Well, yeah, remember what happened after moonlighting? They got together.
I don't want the redemption arc either. I think that I don't want him coming back saying,
when you got,
"Oh, you were smart after all." No.
At some point, he's going to have to because she ends up in charge.
That's true.
So, I mean, at some point...
Unless he can't go away.
Why does he have to be...
Unless he ends up dead.
Well, that's also possible,
He can just die. Or
he'll
he
die.
Can be fired, and he can just
He'll die.
Still believing that she's an idiot.
We're already rooting for a character to die, and we're...
It's time to bring out the death hole.
It's only 8 episodes in the entire show.
We can bring out the death hole.
Kill them. We've killed one. Let's kill them all.
Thompson is washed.
One down. One down. Three to go.
The difference is we actually cared about Wash.
Yeah, that's true. I think Sousa would be Wash if he died.
Yeah, Sousa would be Wash.
I would. I care about him. That would be a loss.
So next week... We get the girl with the skills,
and we get a trip. We get a trip into a trap, according to Peggy, and they make it very clear that she leads them into a trap.
Yeah, the Howling Commandos are back.
Yes,
I'm looking forward to that.
I am too.
What are they called again? I couldn't quite hear it.
The Howling Commandos.
The Howling Commandos. My son was about that.
Oh yeah, it's gonna be fun. I still want Nick Fury Sr. I want David Hasselhoff as Nick Fury Sr. It's the only way to make that work.
And will we see Jarvis do more Carol Burnett impression?
Yeah, the lies.
See, now I want him in the little housewife dress that Carol would wear sometimes. That little hat thing,
or the gun with the windsket.
There you go.
Oh, yeah, with the drapes.
There you go. You know,
huge parenting failure on my part when I said, "Oh my God, are you trying to be?" Trying to be Carol Burnett, and my son turned to me and said, "Who's Carol Burnett?"
Yeah.
You have failed to educate him properly.
Now, this goes back to something that we talked about on Rogues Gallery. We had Bob Rozakis on DC Comics, and we were talking about the fact that at some point our kids are going to look at us and say, "What was it like to see Star Wars in the theater? What was it like to see Back to the Future in the theater?"
Right.
And Bob says, "What about your kids asking, what was it like to have comic books that were printed as opposed to electronic?" And this is the same kind of thing. Who's Carol Burnett?
Yeah.
You know, hey, Kanye West is giving that Paul McCartney guy some
Well, okay, so my son has seen Back to the Future in the theater. because, you know, they're doing those they're bringing them back.
Issues, sure. Yep.
So my son did see it in the theater, and he did tell me that, and I know this is going to really put me in a bad spot, but my son was the one that told me, "Hey, that's Stan Lee." I said, "Who?" And then he goes, "The guy with the newspaper." So he, my son redeemed himself.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, there we go. Stan Lee was.
Yeah, now you're skating on thin ice there, Swanell.
Yes, exactly. So, I mean, I knew, I once my son said it, I was, oh, yeah, that is him, you know, all backtracking.
Well, and I like the theory you were talking about earlier, the fan theory that Stan Lee is the Watcher in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. See, I like that idea.
I would really love it to be that at some point we get that moment, especially because we've got, you know, the whole Thanos storyline and thing going on, that where he basically, Stan Lee shows up, you reveal that he is actually the same guy. in every single show and every movie, and suddenly we get, you know, the joke of Stan Lee showing up is not the joke. It's like, no, seriously, I'm an alien. I've been watching humanity since you guys crawled out of the ocean, and I have news. This is a celestial. It's come to stomp on your planet.
And, well, could that be part of the Infinity War? Maybe. Maybe that's the end of the Infinity War Part 2 and sets up Phase 4.
Well, so that would actually be, we've already had the head of a Celestial show up in Guardians of the Galaxy. So,
right.
And the Celestials tie into the creation of the Inhumans, and there's all these different things that it could play into.
Stan Lee is the Watcher.
Yes.
And at the end of the episode tonight, speaking of Chief Dooley, he's sitting in his office.
Oh, and the typewriter starts going.
And it's the magic typewriter.
On the other end is Peter Bishop. And it's Fringe is on the other side of the typewriter. Which, by the way, there's a connection from Fringe and Twin Peaks. We can talk about that on an H2O coming up. Here's the question. Who's on the other end, and are they actually trying to communicate with them, or is it trying to communicate with one of their agents?
It'll be interesting to see, because we'll get a reveal of what's been typed.
Mm-hmm.
We did get to see that there was an airplane apparently that left the Fennel area.
Right.
After the battle, and Howard Stark was on.
Well, it arrived.
It arrived.
Yeah.
So he was there to pick up some stuff, maybe.
But we did not get a chance to see. They did not stay on the passenger list long enough to see who else was on there. I'm looking.
We'll have to look at the frame grab.
We'll even try to pause it, see if we could see anything, but you can't really. It's not long enough.
Yep. We'll have to do a frame grab when it hits the internet tomorrow.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Anyway, next week, we'll have another episode of Level 117. We're going to cut it short tonight because we've been having some technical issues, and people have got to get up early in the morning. So we want to post this post-haste. We're going to cut that off here. If you've got a theory, or if you have comments or ideas or some sort of something, what all you want to share with us about this episode or about the show in general, you can send us an email. level117@scififorme.com. You can leave a comment either on our main site or on our main site. I was about to say, this is not TV. This is not TV, so it's not on YouTube. Our podcasts are available through iTunes, OneCast, Double Twist, and Stitcher. If you want to subscribe, there's an RSS feed over at our main site, which you can use as well. We also have other podcasts. Besides this one talking about the Marvel Universe, we have the Rogues Gallery talking about the DC television shows. We have H2O, Mr. Harvey and I just talk about general what all things and stuffs. And then we have our TV offerings. Paul Newton doing recaps for 12 Monkeys. We've got the Week in Review is back with the week's headlines and the latest news all across, you know, science and technology and video games and genre news and casting and movies and books and all sorts of stuff. And then
we had a lot of stuff.
Yeah, we do have a lot of stuff. And speaking of which, if you like our stuff, We actually have a button now on our main site. It's labeled Support Us. You can actually click on that, and you can give us monies. If you would like to support the cause, as it were, we're not a nonprofit. It's not a 501c3, so it wouldn't be a tax-deductible donation. I hesitate to even call it a donation. But we do have a new banner that we need to make before Planet Comic Con. So those things cost. We don't pay our people, but except in coffee.
And we do get some coffee out of it.
Yeah, we do get coffee out of it. All right, that's going to do it for us this week. Next week, another episode of Agent Carter, another episode of Level 117, and who knows who will join us on the panel. Tonight's panel, I want to thank everybody for being here tonight, Dan Handley and Tim Harvey in the studio.
Always fun.
And Sonia Rodriguez from Corpus Christi, Texas, fulfilling her best friend obligation to actually be on a podcast one time.
Oh, you should come back.
Unless she wants to come back.
You should come back in spite of Jason.
That's right.
And to spite him, I think, really is what should happen.
And he could really use a conscience.
That's another show altogether. All right, folks.
And you don't even know it.
We're going to have a conversation off the air. All right, that's going to do it for us tonight, folks. Thanks very much for listening, and good night.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. You're listening to SciFiForMe Radio.